The recording has started. You may now proceed.
Thank you very much, Lorenz. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 13th of May 2015. On the call today, we have Chuck Gomes, Cheryl Langanore, Alan Greenberg, and Annick Mansculis. We received apologies from J. Scott Evans, Avi Doria, Anil Sade, and Mary Wong, and Greg Schatten and Michael Graham have warned that they will be able to join later. From staff, we have Mika Koenigs, Karen Lentz, Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, Amy Bivins, and myself, Macri Peregrin. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Chuck.
Thanks, and welcome everyone to the call. We have, I think, four working group members on the call, which is much lower than we usually have. And Cheryl, is it correct that you're not in Adobe, right?
Not yet, but I am getting there. I'm just coming out from 1970.
Okay, so we'll just watch that. In the meantime, you know what to do, so that's fine. And we have someone from Alan's here from ALAC. We have Anne from the non-contracted party house and the IPC in particular. I'm here from the registries. And Cheryl, who do you associate with now?
I'm far from fussy. I'll associate with just about anybody, but I think I'm officially here from the at-large community. I think I'm ALAC.
Okay, good, thanks. All right, as was already communicated, there will be a couple people joining us late. I'm going to make the decision to go ahead with the meeting, because it will be recorded, and people will have opportunity between now and next week to review what we discuss and comment on it. And I'd like to hope that we might be able to finalize the final report for the council in our meeting next week, and at least that'll be the tentative plan, depending on how we do today. Agenda is pretty straightforward. If Ann is prepared, and I'll give you a chance to respond to that, Ann, and if you're not, that's okay. But we'll talk about comment 12.5, where the IPC has some concerns and where we've been tweaking the language, and I'll let Marika help us on that one. And then take a look at the timeline document that the staff did and talk about that briefly. And then the goal will be to go through the document, not necessarily looking at each edit that was each red line edit that was made and the document. We'll have the document in the document in Adobe, but rather to let people comment where they have comments. I know I've reviewed it and noted some, but before we go through the document with any comments or questions or discussion we need to have on particular items, in some cases that staff identified, I'll open it up for any general suggestions with regard to the final report, and then we'll go through it in order. So, glad to see Cheryl made it into Adobe and that Tom has joined us. So that's very good. Now, let me ask Anne. Anne, I know you had promised to go back to the IPC, and we understand if there hasn't been time for a response from the IPC yet, but I'll let you tell us whether we need to defer the review comment 12.5 to next week, or is that something we can talk about now?
Yes, Chuck, thank you. It's Anne for IPC. My comments on this are probably mostly informal, going back to check on the original comments from our members prior to submitting the public comments. And I don't think that this is anything that the IPC is going to, fall on its sword over. So I think, there's some reasonable suggestions here. The comment originally came from the what appears to be an inconsistency between the situation where the board is asking for GNSO input. Let's say they have, you know, GAC advice that they've got to resolve that differs or whatever. And then it requires a supermajority of the GNSO council to not initiate a GGP. But then once you get it initiated, because the board has asked for it, you could shut it down with a simple majority. It appears to be an inconsistency. I think, on the other hand, we have to sort of rely on the good faith processes of the GNSO council, you know, that would not occur. And I think as long as, you know, any minority views are represented, which, as you can tell, was one of the primary IPC comments, and I think, you know, that came in most forcefully in connection with a different comment that we made, and there were changes made to the final report based on that. But I think, you know, that's the primary concern at the IPC, is that the board, you know, in the situation where it's initiated by the board, have the benefit of any work that's done in the GGP, even if it's terminated. So, we're not going to hold this up over that. It need not be recorded as a minority view. It's just the emphasis on, you know, providing input to the board when requested from the board.
And do you want it to be recorded as a minority view?
Well, not if we make the changes that essentially require that on termination that they that the views be presented. Now, I'm not sure what this language, if applicable, means, but maybe Marika can. I know she's displaying the points of view language as a change to the report, and I don't think, you know, I think it does cure the problem. The question I would only have is what does if applicable mean?
So thanks, Ann. This is Chuck. Let me turn it over to Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. And as Ann noted, the language that's currently up on your screen is the proposed compromise, or at least the proposed language to address the concern that Ann and the IPC had expressed. And just to note, on the term if applicable, I think it's more to the point that, you know, there may be a situation, for example, where a GGP is working on an issue, but events take over the need for that work. So there's not necessarily consensus status on positions that the group was working on, but it's more a question that, you know, because something else has happened, that work is no longer relevant, and the team may decide there's no need to proceed. So I think it's you know, it's so early in the process that there is not an ability to actually make a consensus designation per the working group guidelines, because there is no kind of formed position around recommendations where it would even make sense to try and do that. So that's where the if applicable comes in, because there may be situations where a GGP is terminated for reasons that have, you know, nothing to do with not being able to reach agreement, but it may be other events that have taken over. You know, for example, as well, if there's a realization, you could imagine as well, halfway through a GGP, the group actually realizes that a PDP needs to be initiated, as they realize that, contrary to what they initially thought, there will be a need to, or there will be recommendations for, or likely recommendations for consensus policy, which as such may require an early termination of the GGP without a specific, you know, consensus position around certain issues. So hence the if applicable, to make sure that we're not forcing something in a report that may not exist.
Thanks, Marika. Go ahead, Anne.
Yes, thanks. I think this is Anne again for the transcript. Marika raises a really interesting point. So, for example, by simple majority, there could be a vote to terminate because a simple majority would say, well, this actually, you know, requires an EPDP or a PDP rather than a GGP. And I think that if that's the case, you know, it's important to reflect, you know, that conclusion, which may not be a reflection of what we formally call consensus status within, you know, a PDP working group. So I think what I'm wondering about is that it's not necessarily consensus status that needs to be reported here. It's really you know, what did the GGP team conclude? You know, the issue of consensus status, okay, we may not get to that point in the GGP, but what we need to know is what the GGP team, by its simple majority, concluded, and that's what the board needs to know.
So are you – just a second, Alan, but this is Chuck again. So are you suggesting that maybe we change the wording there and the points of view represented in the GGP team, including their conclusions?
Something like, you know, the reason for termination. And, you know, the reason for termination, the points of view represented in the GGP team and the consensus status, if applicable, would probably do it. But, yeah. No.
Okay, we'll come back to that. So this is Chuck again. So let me go to Alan and then back to Marika.
Hi. That's already there. If you read the stuff before the gold or yellow, it says we're going to have to document, outline the reasons for the proposed action, the termination or suspension. And we then added, and that should include you know, alternate points of view or the consensus status, I would change the if to as. You know, as applicable implies that if they're available, they should be included. But it's not a decision point other than that. But the original part of the sentence already says we have to document why we're doing this. So the reasons are already there. This is just the modification to the reasons. Not
Thanks,
the
Alan.
Okay. Enhancement.
Go ahead. Anne, would you like to respond?
No, I think that's right. I'm sorry. I think it's correct that the reasons are, and this is Anne again for the transcript, the reasons have to be outlined. But now I'm experiencing some confusion over proposed termination or suspension. Does that mean the point at which it comes to council for a vote?
Yes, I think it does.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
So
again,
the only
this is not an issue
the
IPC is going to go to the mat on it, and I don't think it should be listed as a minority viewpoint. And as long as it's, you know, clear that the reasons will be reported to the board if terminated, then I think, you know, that satisfies the primary concern of IPC for sure.
And does anybody have a problem with changing if to as Alan suggested? This is Chuck. Okay. And, Alan, is that a new hand? Thank you. One of the things in the GNSO world, we have an amazing number of old hands, so, including mine.
older than others.
Oh, dear. That had to be said, did it, Chuck? All right.
Thanks, Cheryl. Any other discussion on this issue? Okay, very good. So we can go to the next agenda item, and I'll turn it over to Marika. Hopefully everybody had a chance to look at the timeline. There are actually two parts to it, but I'll let Marika talk about that.
Yes, so this is Marika. So there was a question, I think, from the working group to get an idea or get some insight into the expected duration of these different new processes. So what we did from the staff side is basically look at the current PDP, and we've been tracking data on the PDP for, I think, the last couple of years to try to compare, like, the different phases, how long do they take on average. So we have those data, and on page 2 you can see, you know, how those figures look going back to the IRGP denials. That's when we started tracking this. All the way through to the curative rights PDP, and I think there are probably some new ones up and coming that we'll need to add shortly. So it gives you, I think, for each phase, the kind of median duration. And looking at that, basically, these are really estimates. You know, we'll probably need to look at actual data down the road to see how right or how wrong we were on how the different new processes may look in the different phases that are associated with those. So, for example, looking at the EPDP, you know, the main difference in the EPDP is that, you know, you take away the whole initial phase of, you know, the issue report, the comment period on that, the final issue report. And also what I did factor in putting these numbers in is that it is likely, or at least I think that's what we're foreseeing, that an EPDP would typically be initiated on issues that are very specific and likely narrowly scoped. This is on an issue that already has been discussed before, that either was part of a previous PDP that needs to be revised. So again, I think that for each of the time frames, we've kind of shortened those, assuming that most likely those issues would be much more narrowly focused, and some of the initial research is probably already covered in your preceding efforts that led up to that EPDP. And similarly for the GIP, again, I think this is as well a little bit of a wild guess, because as I think we're envisioning a GIP, it's typically used to either respond to a public comment form or where a letter may be written by the council responding to either the board or another SOEC or, as I said, a public comment form on a certain issue. And often there are certain timelines that are associated with that that may drive that input. And so again, it's looking at getting a couple of volunteers together, writing up a draft, getting that back to the council, which could take very little time, but could take as well a bit more time. So here, again, this is an estimate. It may take up to 2 months to get that ready, get it to the council list, 10 days for people to either agree, disagree, make further changes, and then submit it at the latest 80 days after the initiation. But I think this probably could be done as well much shorter, but again, it's often driven by what is the issue, how complex is it, and how much time is available. Then for the GGP, again, looking a little bit probably similar as the EPDP, typically we anticipate that it's an issue that's already scoped in, on previous occasions or very narrowly focused on a specific question that may require less time compared to a full-blown policy development process. But again, I think it's worth pointing out here that it will all depend on the question that is being asked. If it's a very specific, narrowly focused question, it may be something that can be done in much less time, noting that, of course, there are a number of required steps, such as asking for input from all SOAs/ACs and stakeholder groups and constituencies, as well as a public comment form or on an initial peer report. So there is a kind of minimum duration. But at the same time, if the issue is very complex, of course, it could span the similar time frame as the PDP currently has. So again, so this is our best guess at this point in time, but probably will be interesting to track if we go forward as it currently stands to see indeed if that matches what we had in mind.
Thank you very much, Marika, and thank you for the team, staff team, in developing both of these tables. This is Chuck speaking again. Let me open it up to see if anybody on the call has any questions on either of these tables. Okay. I have one, and if somebody still comes up with one, please raise your hand. So my question is this. Is the intent to include this in our final report? Should we include it in the final report? I'll open that up. Alan.
I guess on a philosophical ground, as long as we make it clear what the presumptions are, I find it hard to justify not including information like this if we have it. When I look at this, I say, an expedited PDP will still take close to a year and two-thirds, or whatever the number is, year and a half, which in some level is not, doesn't sound all that expedited to me. It may
unless
be
you compare it to a 1,143.
Well, but that's the median, and we have had shorter ones.
I understand.
It might be illustrative to in addition to put the median, put the best and worst cases that we have on record or something like that, at least in recent history, to give people some idea of the range, or if you're statistically minded, the standard deviation. But I can't see not providing it. it may well generate some comments that that are important.
Thanks, Alan. Chuck again. And, you know, when I first reviewed these, I also wondered whether median is the best statistic to use, and there are other statistics that look very different in certain situations. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, boy, we've got to be careful not to make this too complicated, and the median's a fairly simple statistic. And I think you said it pretty well. As long as we qualify what's being presented here, it's probably better to present it than not. But and I see some check marks, and I'm assuming that those are in agreement for including it. If that's not the case, please raise your hand and let me know. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that indeed at the top of the document, we put in some assumptions that we made in including the data. So maybe worth for the group to look at it as well after we've included it in the report as one of the annexes to see if there's anything that should be added or further explained. And I think as well, especially the third bullet probably conveys quite well what I've been saying before, that of course actual duration depends on a number of factors. You know, complexity of the issue is one, but also resources available to actually do the work. I think is current environment probably important point as well. If three people needing to do the work, it may take much longer than if you have 20 people helping out. And as well, of course, your general support or lack thereof of possible recommendations. If it's an issue around which people have already coalesced or there's general agreement that it needs to be quickly fixed in a certain way, that makes a huge difference as well compared to an issue where there's a lot of different viewpoints and not a likely a consensus point around which people may get together.
Thanks, Marika. Anne.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. It's Anne for the transcript with IPC. I think that when I look at these estimates, there's a surprising factor for me in that the GGP estimates are the same time frame, I think, as the EPDP estimates. And in my mind, I had the idea that as a group, we were developing tools that would, for example, allow the board to have GNSO input or guidance, I guess you would say, in the guidance process that would allow them to address things more quickly than that when consensus policy is not involved. So whereas I'm not surprised by the estimate in relation to EPDP, it strikes me that the GGP that we were trying to develop should be a tool that works more expeditiously than an EPDP. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. And keep in mind that all of these estimates are highly dependent on the issue or issues that are involved. On simpler issues, it probably would be much faster. And on more complex issues, it may take longer. So keep that in mind when you're looking at these. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. One thing I did just note, looking at this again, is that, for example, for the GDP, we've added the same time frame for implementation, but it's quite likely, or at least I think that's what we've foreseen the GDP for as well, that a GDP could address questions that have come up during implementation. So that may be a time frame that is actually a lot shorter or actually already underway as part of either the implementation of a PDP that was taken on previously. So I think there it may be that that especially that implementation time frame is not accurate, because that is possibly something that is already underway. With regards to the other steps, of course, the GGP has a lot of similarities to an EPDP as well as a PDP. There are a number of steps in there that are the same. So it's the development of an initial report. And I think there again, we probably, and we haven't really done that, but maybe looking at, for example, non-PDP working group efforts, where we could also say, and this is one of those, is to say, look, even though it wasn't a PDP, did things go quicker? And probably not. I think if I take the numbers, for example, of this working group, probably is very comparable to the PDP, if not even more, and maybe interesting to do that comparison. So I think we shouldn't assume just because it's not a PDP, it's automatically faster, because it still may be issues that are, you know, complex, that need to be worked through. You still are also, I think, faced with the element that, you know, groups do meet on a weekly basis or even on a bi-weekly basis, and you do need to get back to certain issues that you discussed the previous week because people didn't, you know, read up on those, or there are certain new issues that have, you know, come up. So I think in general, regardless of which process you use, there is certain things that are very cyclical. And I think, again, it all comes back to as well. Indeed, if the board does ask for input within 6 months, well, you know, the GNSO can put a time frame or timetable next to that that is, okay, let's meet, you know, for 2 days face-to-face, you know, or have calls every other day, because there are certain ways, of course, that you can make things shorter. But this, again, is on the assumption that a group would run in a kind of normal way that, you know, most of our working groups typically run, meeting on a weekly or biweekly meeting, and, you know, following their natural course of discussions, not necessarily triggered by an external deadline.
Thanks, Marika. This is Chuck. I want to follow up with you on one area that you talked about a little bit, and that's implementation. Because the GGP won't require implementation by contracted parties like a consensus policy would, why do you think that implementation would take so long?
Yeah, and this is Marika. I think that is already one probably where, indeed, it's probably not a realistic number. And, again, it's purely based on, you know, cutting in half the time that we have for a PDP, for an ePDP and a GGP. But, again, the assumption is here that, you know, for example, a question may relate to, you know, the actual implementation of policy recommendations on how to do something technically, or, you know, I'm just making this up. So the question comes back to the GNSO. The implementation review team wasn't able to answer the question. They want guidance from the GNSO Council, and the GNSO Council decides that they want to do a GGP to fully understand the issue and provide feedback. So that may be that, you know, if it's choosing between three different technical ways in which you can implement recommendations through that process, you know, one of those rolls out, and that presumably then still has a certain implementation time associated with it. Although I said before, as it was originally part of, you know, a PDP, that implementation question, you may question, indeed, is that implementation and still linked to the GGP, or it actually continues back into the PDP where the question came from. And implementation here, of course, you can think of other things as well. There may be certain things that staff is required to do. For example, if it's, you know, the GGP would recommend producing informational materials on certain issues, or create a website, or certain other kinds of things that need to happen, that would also require time to do it. It's not necessarily implementation as, you know, new contractual requirements, but it may be other ways in which implementation may need to happen. But as I said, you know, this is purely a number, and it may look very different in practice.
Thanks. And before I go to Alan, I'm going to do that very quickly, Alan. This is Chuck. Michael had suggested in the chat showing the range, maybe along with the median, and I had thought of that myself. Don't know if that would make this too complicated, just maybe on the one chart, although I'm just looking at the other chart as well. So anyway, we can talk about that a little bit more. Let me go to Alan.
Thank you. If I wait long enough, I don't have anything to say. I was going to suggest something akin to what Michael said, but not quite the same. I would suggest the minimum and the estimate. I know when we were doing the revamped PDP, Marika pulled together what is the absolute smallest amount of time it could take. Assuming deliberation time was zero, you know, assuming the minimum public comment periods and so on and so forth, and it came out to be something, if I remember correctly, about 300 days, which says, you know, assuming there is no discussion, no debate, but we have to go through the motions, it will take that long. I think putting those numbers in will be very illustrative and will give some level of comfort. Remember why we started this discussion, because the ALAC said we really worry that if we're going to keep on going back to the GNSO for things that we discover along implementation, we will never get anything done. And the numbers that are showing there confirm that. You know, we're going to have to go back to the GNSO for a bit of guidance. It's going to take a year and a half. Well, if you accept that, we're in big trouble. I suspect if we look at the minimum numbers for a guidance process, that is, the GNSO is approached and said, we have an option, X or Y. Which do you think we should do that's more in confirmation, you know, that aligns more with what the policy intended? The GNSO picks X, and it's a done deal. We also have the ePDP, where we envisioned an ePDP. One of the uses of it is going to be to fix a problem in a PDP. It is a consensus policy. It does require a formal PDP-like process to allow contracted parties' contracts to be changed. But it's not a big debate. We realize we made a mistake. We all know what the fix is. All we have to do is make it so, to quote Captain Picard. So knowing what the minimum time is, with if there is no debate, if the implementation is trivial, I think will give us some level of comfort. I hope that what we're designing here is practical and not going to create a morass that we'll never get out of. So I would suggest, in addition to the estimate numbers we have there, put the minimum numbers for each of the categories and add them up. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Good comments. This is Chuck again. Before I ask everyone whether you would support that or oppose that, it seems to me that the minimum should be easy to calculate, except maybe for implementation. I think it's kind of hard to do there, especially since we don't have any history, and that varies so much. But we could put it everywhere else.
Chuck, if I may interrupt.
Go ahead, Alan.
The minimum is easy. It's zero. In something like a GGP, if they're asking for an opinion so the board can continue or implementation can continue, the implementation is moot. It's already part of an implementation that's ongoing. It doesn't add anything. They just needed an answer.
And would the same thing apply to a board vote?
To a board vote? I'm sorry.
I mean, maybe a board vote isn't even needed for a GGP.
It might not be.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Ann, and you can jump back in, Alan, as needed here. Go ahead, Ann.
Yes, thank you. It's Ann with IPC, and I am in agreement with Alan about we need to be adopting tools that are practical and that we need to be showing GNSO Council as well when we introduce our report and public as well that these are practical tools. I really feel like that with the GGP, one thing we need to be looking at is all of those ad hoc processes that we studied at the beginning of our work, and realizing that from a practical standpoint, the board took actions on an ad hoc basis because it needed fast answers. And we're trying to avoid that, right? So the input process, you know, looks reasonable at 80 days, but it seems to me that the GGP process really needs to be somewhere in between the GIP and the PDP in terms of the at least adopting a goal of giving a quicker answer. I mean, if you went in between those two numbers, you'd come out with 6 months. We're trying to develop standardized processes, but we're also trying to, you know, develop tools that work in a timely way. And the distinction between an ePDP and a GGP is ePDP involves consensus policy, and GGP does not involve consensus policy, but reflects a standardized process that does not work ad hoc or in the dark. It in order to be more practical, the goal should be for it to work, you know, more quickly than any PDP. Thank you.
Thanks, Ann. This is Chuck. Is there anybody that objects to showing just for this chart, okay, the minimums and an estimate? Now, we'd have to define those up above to make sure it's clear what we're giving. But is anybody opposed to that? Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Not opposed, although, you know, I am concerned that it will paint a picture that we know is not true. And we, you know, I've done the same thing with the PDP, and then people are like, oh, you know, we can do a PDP in 9 months. And that number then, you know, started being thrown out left, right, and center, and we had to tell people, like, no, that is, you know, when all the stars are aligned and everything, you know, goes perfect, and that's just not realistic to say that. And I think similarly with the GGP, I think we, you know, made very clear that it can go faster, but I think there are probably certain topics, and I can think of, you know, questions that the board has asked, string similarity, what was the other recent one where there also have been left letters that certain things have been asked to counsel for an opinion where, at least from my perspective, I think a GGP probably would have been triggered, but I don't necessarily see those as topics where the council can produce a quick answer. It would be nice, but if I think as well the whole reason behind this process is that, you know, when the council comes back to the board, they can say, look, we've developed this in a truly, you know, bottom-up multi-stakeholder process. We have gone out to all the stakeholder groups and constituencies, other SOs and ACs, we've done public comment, you know, we've done our homework. So when we come back to you and you know, what we present to you is a real representation of, you know, a GNSO consensus. And again, as well, that's why, well, it has a trigger of you know, board needing to vote on that in that case. So, yeah, I'm happy to include the minimums, and I can just look back at what we did for the PDPs, because in most cases it will align. But I think we do need to be very careful to be, as well, at the same time, very realistic on what the actuals are probably going to look like. And as I said before, it very much depends on, you know, complexity of the issue, you know, resources available, general support, or lack thereof for possible recommendations, because I think that is really the determining factor.
And I think we can include those kind of qualifications in the assumptions up above. And I think they're important to include those. And you make some really good points on the minimums that should be included in the qualifications. But I also think that, especially for the GGP, we may be painting a more grim picture than is helpful. And the one place where I think it's maybe there's a couple things we could do there, like under in board vote, we could put if needed. There might actually be GGP things that don't necessarily need a board vote, so that step could be eliminated in those cases, and not that we have to change it. And so that would explain why there might be a zero or a, it'd still be 245 on this. That's another thing we have to be careful of when we're including minimums and everything is these numbers are cumulative, I believe. So we have to keep that in mind, make sure that's clear. Implementation, I'm having real trouble thinking that 527 is a good number for implementation for a GGP. If you just take away the fact that you don't have to do an IRT, that involves the parties that are implementing it, in this case the registrars and the registries and so forth, that's a huge difference, I think, in implementation on a GGP. And I'm okay if you want to think about that between now and our meeting next week, but those are my comments on that. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of these numbers, and when I look at them more, I get shocked. My recollection is, and Marika, I'm sure, will tell me if I'm wrong, is the old PDP rules used to say that the board needed to vote at the next meeting after the GNSO approved a PDP. And I think there was some provision that they could skip one meeting, but that's it. Now we're allowing hundreds of days between the two processes, and even allowing for the comment, public comment that the board now tends to consider mandatory, which wasn't, I don't think was there before. That's a long time for the board to deliberate on something. Now, it may well take that long in some cases, and it has taken that long in some cases, but there are other cases, again, especially if they're waiting for the answer, where that might take much less time at all. So I'm just reinforcing the fact that I think we need to say what the minimum is. And aside from anything else, having the minimum tells us that if in a given situation, is this a practical process to follow? You know, if we need an answer in 30 days and the minimum GGP is 95 days, then we need to know that. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And so far I haven't seen anybody objecting to putting in the minimums other than the comments that Marika made. So let's go ahead and go that way. Any comments? I mean, am I way off on the implementation estimate for a GGP? Are people comfortable with having what looks like, you know, what, 150 days or so for implementation of a GGP?
Chuck, I've already gone on record as I think in many cases it's going to be effectively zero.
Yeah,
if we're being asked for guidance, then we give it. It's done.
So the question and follow-up to that then, Alan, Chuck speaking again, is are people comfortable with saying 0 to 527? Or should it be 0 to some smaller number?
Well, some of those numbers may not be zeros. I haven't looked at them in detail.
No, I understand. I was just talking about implementation of GGP when I said 0 to 527. I guess we're just talking about 6 months implementation, so maybe that's not so much. Shall we just go zero? Anybody object to 0 to 527 minimum to estimate? Okay, let's go with that. Marika, do you need any more information on this?
No, I'm happy. As I said, I'll look at what I did before on the PDP and add those numbers in on the minimum, but it's, in most cases, you know, similar steps apply. I'm happy to change all these to lesser numbers, but, you know, I want to emphasize again that there are so many factors that influence the timing that, you know, as I said, there are many ways in which you can do things faster, and, of course, a council can decide to do so, but this is really based on how we, you know, currently run working groups, and I think our experience with PDPs as well as non-PDP working groups.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. And the only one I was suggesting the change on, it doesn't sound like there's much support for that, would be the implementation of a GGP. So I don't think we're talking about the estimates changing, at least not right now. So thanks for doing that. The other question we have, of course, is where this goes, and I would guess it probably would go at the end of Annex B, which is GNSO process options. Does that make sense? Where these two tables would go? Okay. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was commenting on you're saying the GGP is 0 to 527. There's no way it's going to be zero. I mean, if nothing else, council has to vote, and there's a 2-week, there's a 10-day period that you have to give advance notice.
There's a council there. That's already covered, Alan. There's a place for council vote and board vote, and then implementation.
Yeah, but sorry, I thought those numbers were cumulative that we have there.
I think they are.
Right.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it would be 240. It could be 245 to.
It's the delta between.
It depends what the minimum is for council vote, but that could be duplicated down in implementation if there's no board vote or if there's nothing to do for implementation.
The way I'm reading the chart, and tell me if I'm wrong, is it is in GGP implementation is 147 days. It's the difference between the previous one and that one.
Right. I am reading it the same way.
Okay, and you said implementation is zero.
I know. I was wrong.
You meant zero to 147 or 145.
Exactly. Yeah, oh, my mistake.
Okay.
We're on the same page.
And we're not disagreeing.
And correct. I wasn't careful. Okay? All right. Hopefully we spent enough time on that. And next week we can look at the revised chart and see if there's any more discussion. Let's jump on into the final report. And I want to open it up for any general comments on the final report, general suggestions that don't relate to specific edits or portions of the document. And I'll throw that open to everybody. I have three suggestions myself, but I'll certainly let others go ahead of me if there are any hands. Okay, and feel free to raise your hand as I proceed, but for time's sake, I'll go ahead and continue. The first one I had is would it be helpful in the red line version only, obviously, of our final report, if we noted where a particular change was made in response to a specific commenter, like, for example, this comment was made in response to ALAC comments? I don't feel strongly about this. I think it would be nice, but it's not necessarily something we have to do, clearly. So I throw that out just to obviously they can go back and look at the comment analysis and our table, our review table and so forth, and see. But I think it would be a nice feature if we did indicate with a very brief comment in response, edit made in response to ALAC and NCSG comments or whatever the case may be. Any thoughts on that, Alan?
Well, if it's a change that really improves the report and everyone thanks us for it, yes, you should credit us.
Thank you.
Otherwise not. No, I seriously. What goes into the final report ends up being the consensus of the working group. And if we look at a comment from anyone and say it has no merit, we reject it. If it has merit, then we integrate it and it improves the report, hopefully. So I would not home or cite these things. If anyone wants to go back into the details, they can find things. But, Marieke also points out it would be a lot of work at this point.
And Ann and Cheryl are agreeing. I'm comfortable with that. That's why I opened up the discussion. So let's just drop that idea.
Always happy to shoot you down, Chuck.
Thank you, Alan.
and to support you. Bye.
Okay. My second comment, and this one, I would just suggest that we eliminate all formatting comments. They just clutter up the document. I think the only way to do that is to go through and delete them individually. But we certainly don't need, and we're of course just talking about the red line version. They would all be gone in the clean version. My third suggestion, and this is a little pet peeve of mine. I think I'm the only one in the community that ever cares about this. But I would format tables so that they don't so rows don't break across the page, so that it's real easy to see all of the comments in a particular row without going from page to page and back and forth like that. So, and staff, if you don't want to do that, I can live with that. But we don't have any really wide rows, I don't think, in our tables. I understand in some cases you can't avoid doing that because of lots of information in a particular table row. So those are my general comments. Anybody else have any general comments before we get to specifics?
Chuck, Cheryl here. That's a pet peeve of mine as well, so don't be alone in that table.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I thought I was all alone.
No, it annoys the living daylights out of me.
Well, it's really a pain.
Especially
when you have to go back and forth for different columns.
Yeah, I don't fuss about it until the final drafting of something. but it even annoys me during the drafting of something. So, yes, you have my absolute support on that one. And, yes, I know it adds more pages to the whole document. Well, then, tough.
Thanks, Cheryl. Made me feel better. Alan.
I strongly support that also. You know, little things like don't break things over page boundaries. Don't forget to copy over the title so that the page stands in
right.
Right. I'll just add a bit of interest. In the days where everything was on paper, it was okay to break some things if they're facing pages, but not if they're opposite pages. Nowadays, when we view things on screens, we don't even have that benefit.
Thanks. Okay. Any other general comments on the report before we get to specifics? Okay, let's jump right in to the specifics then. And I just want to call the people's attention, that, and Marika is aware of this, okay, the table of contents is not accurate right now. Don't worry about that. That will be updated. So if you look at the annexes, they're not quite right in the titles of the annexes and the table of contents. They're correct in the body of the document. So just to let you know, I don't think we need to talk about that any much. Anne, go ahead.
Excuse me, Amy Bevin-Stroins.
Thank you, Chuck. It's Anne with IPC. I'm not sure if we're going to do this sort of page by page or whatever, but I had a question on working definitions in the definition of, and this is page 10.
Okay, let's do it somewhat sequentially, okay?
Okay.
So if you'll hold on a second, we will come to that. In fact, I think that's probably the next one. My comment was on the table of contents. It was on page 2. So go ahead. Page 10 is good.
Oh, okay, although apparently I think I may have to the second comment I have may affect the executive summary, but let's do this one. This is simpler. When it says implementation of a GNSO policy, and we are saying the process of carrying out or applying a GNSO policy, shouldn't we be saying after adoption by the ICANN board or because we've been pretty careful to be clear about how policy does get adopted, and a GNSO policy cannot be implemented until it's adopted by the ICANN board.
So is this page 11?
Page 10, I think. She's displaying it.
Okay.
Chuck still uses, you know, paper. You've got to remember, Anne, it's, you know.
Okay. Actually, yeah, Chuck and I are both pretty bad about that because I like to write notes that are not electronic, and that makes me a dinosaur.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, I'm at the working definitions that are shown on the screen, and I'm using the red line version of the page numbers, not the clean. That
mm-hmm.
can also make a difference in the page numbers.
Yeah. It refers to the last little green thing there, implementation of a GNSO policy.
Uh-huh.
And the process of carrying out or applying a GNSO policy. But I guess where I'm confused is carrying out and applying is, that's after, you know, it's as adopted by the ICANN board, right? Implementation doesn't happen until the board...
this is Marika. I think
that's correct. Though.
Yeah, and this is Marika. I think that is addressed in the definition on the next page. If you see there, GNSO policy, which is also defined as any GTLD-related policy recommendation that is approved by the ICANN board. So I think that is covered in the definition of GNSO policy, and as such may not need to be repeated.
Well, I think it does, actually, because you're talking about implementation, and that only happens after the board approves it. So, and the board might make changes or difference, you know. So it's the process, when we say carrying out or applying, that's got to be as adopted by the ICANN board. It can't be applied prior to that.
Well, let's not spend a lot of time on this. I don't have any problem adding that. because I don't think it detracts from the definition. Whether it's needed or not, we can debate, but let's not take that time. Alan?
Thank you. I'm having a horrible sense of deja vu because I remember a long conversation where we already fixed this problem somewhere. And my recollection is we fixed it in the core place and then the other definitions built upon it. But I'm not sure I see it here, but I put money on the fact that we covered this already somewhere.
And are you okay with it making that addition, Alan?
Not if it is redundant based on how we define GNSO policy. This is implementation of a GNSO policy. Do we have GNSO policy somewhere? There's consensus policy just above. I remember we already put in following approval by the board or some word similar to that.
Okay, Marika, go ahead.
Oh, this is Marika. Yeah, there's action on hand, but to answer Alan's question, GNSO policy is right underneath that, which, as I read before, says energy utility-related policy recommendation that is approved by the ITIN board. So from my perspective, it is already part of that definition of GNSO policy and hence does not necessarily need to be repeated. But if Anne feels strongly about it, I guess we can just add applying a GNSO policy, as we say here, that is approved by the ICANN board, and then we also include the same footnote, because the footnote 5 basically outlines in great detail what is required or how a GNSO policy is developed and then adopted as well. So maybe that's a way of fixing that.
And just a caution here, let's try to avoid going back and revisiting things that we spent sometimes multiple meetings on, unless it's really essential. Because we could take 4 or 5 meetings to go through this. I don't think that's time well spent. Anne, go ahead. Oh, okay. All right. Anything before page 15, which is, I better check to see, on page 15, which starts out in section, the beginning of section 4, if my page numbers are off. So it's right at the beginning of policy and implementation principles, section 4. Now, one of the things, this comes out of staff comments on following pages here, and it's the idea some of our principles say must, some of them say should, and so forth. So I wondered whether should we say policy and implementation principles / requirements, because some of the things are worded as must, which sounds like a requirement rather than just a principle or a guideline. Some of the things say should, which sounds more like a guideline, and staff flag this in their comments. And before we actually discuss that too much, let's go ahead and look at staff comments. If you scroll down to item B, principles that apply to policy and implementation, and look at the comment there by Marika. Marika, why don't you go ahead and talk about that one?
So this is Marika. So going through the principles, we notice that in certain cases we use must and others we use should, while the overall heading is talking about principles, which probably should is the more appropriate term. So the question to the group is indeed, is there a need indeed to be consistent and changing that to should? Should there be must? Is it okay to have those two terms used here even though we're talking about principles? So I think that's basically the issue we wanted to bring forward.
Thank you, Marika. Cheryl, go ahead.
Thanks, Cheryl Langdon, for the record. I'm going to channel Avery here. I think we spent considerable time in some of this language debating the must versus shoulds, and so I wouldn't be particularly keen to go for consistency's sake on one or t'other, but I am happy with the elegant solution that Chuck has put forward by a minor editorial change to the section title, which I think covers then the very valid point that the staff comment makes. Thanks.
Thanks, Cheryl. And thanks, Anne, for the check mark. That's one way to handle it. Myself, for example, if we just look at that general statement where must occurs there right out in the first paragraph in Section B, I think we all agree that policy and implementation processes must be based on multi-stakeholder models. And we did spend a lot of time on that. So would that be a comfortable solution for people to just make that heading change? And we probably have to make it in each case. Policy, any time we say principles, it would be slash requirements. Does that work? Does anybody see a problem with that? That is a one way of correcting this, and it was a good catch, Marika. I'm really glad you guys caught that. Okay, nobody objects to that? Okay. Then, so I think my next comment related to the comment that's on the page that's showing right now. I don't have anything until about page 23. Does anybody have anything before then? And page 23, at least what I'm looking at, is a whole bunch.
Sorry, Chuck, it's Ann. I have my hand up, and I have something on page 19. I think it is.
Go ahead.
So I see that we... trying to address the problem with binding and non-binding by changing the word to obligatory advice that would apply in the case of a GGP. And so I'm trying to understand the interplay between this obligatory guidance and what we did with respect to the voting thresholds for a GGP. I think what I'm trying to understand in this interplay is a certain hypothetical, which is, what if there's a termination of a GGP, then I guess that means that there's no obligation whatsoever in relation to that the report that comes out of that GGP. I'm trying to understand the interplay between the obligatory guidance and the... I think we said before that a GGP has this obligatory aspect where the results are binding... Excuse me, I shouldn't use the word binding, but the results, the board would require two-thirds rejection in order to reject that GGP result. And I guess what we are confirming then is if a GGP is terminated, there is no obligatory aspect of the guidance?
That is correct.
Okay.
Marika, did you want to comment on that?
This is Marika. This is actually something we noted as well in the executive summary, and Chuck, you may have missed that comment, because I felt similarly that I didn't have any issues with the term binding, and for me it felt less awkward than the current term of obligatory, because I agree. It seems to imply indeed that advice itself is obligatory, while what is actually obligatory is for the board to consider the guidance, and it needs a certain majority to overturn that advice if it believes it's not in the interest of ICANN, the corporation, or the community. So I didn't really feel that obligatory was the right word, but I couldn't think of anything better. So that's why as well I marked it as one of the items for the group to look at. I know that Michael said as well, what was the objection to binding? And when I looked at the comments and incorporated them, I actually had the same feeling. I know it was in response, I think, to a comment from the BGR, the brand registry group, I think. And I don't think I was on the call during which that was discussed, so I wasn't really clear, you know, why that term wasn't liked. But as I said, I don't think obligatory is necessarily the right term either, so I'm looking to the working group to provide some non-binding guidance on what to do with that.
Yeah, and let's not start that, this is Chuck, let's not start that discussion all over because we spent quite a lot of time on that. So, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, my recollection is binding was objectionable because it's not binding. It's only binding should the board choose they can overturn it. And I think that's why we didn't want to use the word binding because it implied that it was truly binding. I mean, if we talk about binding arbitration, the board can't legally can't overrule it. They've agreed to accept the results. So binding is not the correct word. It's provisionally binding or something like that, which is going to be harder to explain. So I think that's why binding went out. Obligatory came in, as an alternative, and perhaps it has its own baggage with it.
I'm sure it does, although it probably doesn't have as much baggage as the term
well,
binding.
Well, I mean, it's not as bad for the GIP because the GIP is akin to what we call advice from advisory committees. That is, the board is not obliged to follow it, but it is input into their process.
Thanks, Alan. Michael.
Whatever direction we go, and I would frankly explain the use of binding the way that or qualify it in the terms that Alan just did, but certainly obligatory, I mean, there's not a better word that I can think of than binding, with the caveat that it only becomes truly binding upon approval by the board, I suppose. But obligatory, yeah, I think contextually it's wrong in a lot of these places. So I think maybe at the very least we need to go back and individually look at these spots and come back with a proposal either for a different term or the explanation of binding. I don't want to go back over that ground either, Alan, but I think we just mish up our, the meaning of what we're trying to say by throwing in another term. At least the BRG understood what we were talking about.
Thanks, Michael. Chuck again. Do people want to revisit this between now and next week and somebody put forward some alternatives, or do we just leave this as we agreed to previously? Ann, go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Chuck. It's Ann for the transcript. I think we can suggest other words, but whatever words we adopt, I think they should be just included in the working definition. That makes it easier for people to say, well, what exactly does that mean? And it's certainly laid out here what it does mean, but I think it'd be helpful to have it in the working definition.
This is Chuck. I have one concern about that. Binding means different things depending on what group you're talking about. For example, binding on contracted parties for a capital C consensus policies has a very different meaning than binding on the board, like Michael was just talking about. So it might be better to put a footnote that qualifies whatever term we use rather than to put it in the working definitions.
Yeah, I mean, I think, we could use obligatory and that's fine, but I just think that when we put stuff in the working definitions, it just, and frankly, this was my point with respect to the first thing, too, about implementation of DNSO policy. It wasn't about revisiting. Revisiting is, we've done this binding stuff for a long time and had a long discussion about it, The point is it clear to those who are reading it who haven't been on this working group? And it's for that reason that I strongly recommend that whatever term we do adopt, we just stick it in the working definitions, even though it is already in the paragraph. But it just makes it easier to refer to.
So let me ask you a question, Ann. Then are you suggesting that we have multiple definitions of binding depending on what party is involved?
No, I'm just suggesting that with respect to this, you know, GGP, this GGP process that, I mean, and may we also, really with respect to GGP, that we put in the working definition, and see, it's here in quotes anyway, obligatory guidance, they're in quotes. And so it just would be helpful to have it in the working definitions. And I'm not, I don't object to the use of the word obligatory. I don't see a problem with that because I know the earlier objection was to use the word binding.
Thanks, Ann. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. In Section 1, I would suggest we change it back to binding. It is non-binding. It is correct. It's understood by all. So I don't think there's any reason to change the words in Section number 1. In number 2, I would change it back to binding. Perhaps it should be in the definition in a clear way, but it is in the next sentence. It says, obligatory or binding guidance means advice that is binding force on the ICANN board to consider the guidance and that it only can be rejected by such and such if the board determines the guidance is not in the interest of whatever. So maybe this doesn't meet the best style guide of defining the word before we use it and also putting it in the definitions, but it's right there. Thank you.
So if I go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I was actually going to say I'm happy, or I think it works well indeed in the first one. The non-binding is probably better than the non-obligatory. But maybe in the second one, if indeed it becomes right tricky to have the right term there, whether it's obligatory or binding, maybe we can just move away from that and just say it tends to provide guidance to the guidance that the board is required to consider, that we actually just already describe it in that first sentence, and similarly in the second one, just say GGP guidance means advice that has, you know, is required to be considered by, or something that we just move away from actually labeling in a way, but that the description of the guidance already basically indicates that what is required is consideration by the board. The guidance itself is not obligatory or binding. It's just binding on the board to consider it.
That seems like a pretty clean solution. Does anybody object to that approach? Okay, and thanks for the check mark, Cheryl. Ann?
Again, I think that's fine, but I do think it would be much clearer if we do that to put GGP guidance as a defined term in the working definition. Because it makes it clear to those who are reading who were not involved in this group.
Anybody object to adding a definition of GGP guidance in the definitions? Marika?
Sorry, all hands.
Okay. So, Anne, would you...
No objection.
Okay. Anne, would you, between now and our meeting, and before our meeting next week, propose a definition for GGP guidance?
Sure, Chuck, but it would be the same one that's already there.
I'm confused. If it's already there, why are we talking about adding it?
We're just talking about putting it in the working definition.
Well, you're talking about putting what's there now in this and what we're looking at in the definitions.
Yeah, just stick it in the definitions so it's clearer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's fine.
Yeah, Ann, it's Michael for the record. I guess you would have to add simply that it is advice developed pursuant to the GGP that has a binding force, correct?
Well, Michael, it would just say means advice that has a binding force on the ICANN board to consider the guidance, and it can only be rejected by a vote of more than two-thirds of the board, because that is the definition. So it's really about something that was already agreed by this working group just putting it in the working definition so that it's super clear.
My question was simply, is there any other place other than the GGP where that term is used? And if I'm reading through the definitions, and this is something that only comes out of a particular particular procedure, I think we should identify that procedure as part of the definition. That's all I was saying.
Well, I would favor letting Marika have staff take a look at that as far as, you know, whether it needs to be.
Yeah, and this is Marika. That's why I have my hand up. I'm a little bit concerned if we start adding this and not other, you know, because we have genus or input process as well. We're going to have the EPDP, because I think we're talking more about a glossary than, because the working definitions were in there. We're saying very clearly these are working definitions that help the working group through its deliberations. They don't have any other status as such. So I think if we start adding things, then we either need to start adding, I think, everything that we have created or are creating is going to be part of a glossary. But at this stage, you know, this is, you know, going to the council, and what will be the focus is the actual recommendations. And, of course, there this term is defined. So I'm not really sure how much value we'll add just adding only this term. I think it would actually maybe create more confusion as it wouldn't define the other terms. But if we start adding the other terms, I think we're no longer in probably working definitions mode, but it would be more kind of glossary that we would be looking at. And as I said, I'm not sure at this stage of the document how much value that would add.
That's a really good point. This really isn't a working definition, because the working definitions were terms that we wanted to agree on at early on in our process to make sure we're all on the same page. This is actually a term that came up as a result of our work rather than something preceding our work. So that's a very valid point. Michael?
I was going to say that's a great point, and I think in a way the entire report is setting up new terms, new terminologies, and new procedures. And if we start, I agree with Marika, if we start with this one, I think we have to set up, you know, a separate document for all of these new terms. And I think since it is defined in the context of where it's presented, I would be happier with leaving it there rather than, you know, doing half in one place and let the rest stand. I think it's fairly clear when you read this.
Thank you, Michael. Ann?
I see the point there. I think that the reason that we originally, during the process, developed this term binding guidance and later, I guess, obligatory guidance was so that it would be clearly distinguished from the GIP process. So we're now going to have up in GIP non-binding advice. And if we, you know, I would favor actually staying with our what we did in the process with the working group. If we don't want to clutter up the working definitions, we should stick with, you know, obligatory guidance.
Alan?
Okay, on that particular point, I really don't care at this point whether we use obligatory or binding. It's defined immediately after its use. When we spent several months on the definitions, I cursed myself for having suggested that we need definitions. I'm doing it again now. When we update the GNSO operating rules to factor in these new processes when and if they're approved, we need to be really careful and get our definitions right. These were working definitions, and we've gone back and tweaked them when we had to. I really don't think we want to spend a lot of time, more time on it, especially in a case like this where the term is defined in the next sentence. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Yeah, I'm certainly supportive of not spending a lot of time on this, but we're now back to binding versus obligatory in number two for the GGP. We had reached agreement on obligatory. Some people aren't happy with that now. and some would like to leave it as obligatory. I'm one of those that can go either way. I don't think this is going to make or break our recommendations as long as it's defined in the paragraph, which it is. Cheryl?
I was happy with Marika's proposed language for the GGP section, talking about guidance and the requirements for that guidance to be responded to. So I would be very happy with binding as bind to replace obligatory in GIP, as I think we've agreed, and not leaving it as obligatory guidance in the GGP section, but replacing it with the other language that Marika proposed earlier. It tears it all up.
Is anybody opposed to that? Okay, Marika, it's all yours. not to do right now, but if you would just use the approach, I thought that was a real clean approach to avoid the controversy between binding and obligatory, and it doesn't change what we're saying here, I don't think, at all. So, okay. I don't have any comment. What time are we doing? We just got about 5 minutes or so. I don't have any comments till page 54. Does anybody else have anything before then? Okay, I'm giving you a chance to look here. Going on page 54, Annex D, I have a totally, I think, I hope, non-controversial edit in Annex, the first number one under Annex, where Annex, the first paragraph of Annex D. It's just, and if you go down to the edited text there, where it says expected to result, that's crossed out, create, just delete the in there and it's a minor edit. We don't need the in. Create new consensus policy, right? Not create in new policy. Minor edit.
It's hardly worth my check mark, but I'm going to agree with
it. I appreciate your check mark.
I just appreciate the little bit of pedantry. I always appreciate a good piece of pedantry, so I'll support you in this, Chuck.
Thank you very much. I don't have anything then until page 68. When I go through these things, if I see something petty, I go ahead and mark it so that it's as clean as possible. So, jumping, anything before page 68? 68, my comment there, this is Annex F, the proposed Expedited GNSO Policy Development Process Manual. And I think, this may not take too much time. Marika, your comment on that page right there, staff comment, is this something that should apply to all process as well as the IRT principles? My question was, what else could it apply to except an EPDP? And it may have just been too late last night that I couldn't see it myself, but it's not clear to me where else it could apply.
So this is Marika. I think it's partly as well, you know, the way it's framed, it's only to the EPDP, but I think it goes more to the general point of that. For example, the mechanisms in that may apply in an IRT shouldn't be used, you know, for people to raise policy issues that they previously didn't get agreement on. And similarly, you know, GGP shouldn't be initiated just because, you know, certain groups didn't get what they want on a PDP and now trying, you know, that path to get the same thing. So I think it's more the general gist of that comment that, you know, the tools that we're developing and as well the way IRTs are expected to operate, you know, are expected to focus on the issues at hand and not using, you know, different tools to try to achieve the same thing that people didn't agree with the first time around. And I see Karen has a hand up, so I'm sure she'll explain that much better than I did.
Go ahead, Karen.
Thank you, Chuck. Actually, Marika, I think you covered it pretty well with what I was going to say. But as we've been talking about, you know, the principles and the IRT processes, I know this is something that, you know, we sort of anticipated being able to use some of these procedures when there is an issue or needs to be some back and forth with the GNSO. And so I know this group has discussed in several instances that they don't want these tools to be used to reopen policy issues or for purposes other than addressing things that have arisen in the implementation. And so the question here is just to pose whether that's sort of a more general principle that's that could be stated elsewhere besides just in the EPDP section.
Thanks, Karen, and thanks, Marika. Now I understand. So the question for the group is, should we add a similar statement, modifying it as necessary, to the IRT and the GGP? Is there anywhere else where it might apply? So, I mean, what are, any thoughts on that? Do you want to pick up on this when we start our meeting next week and think about it between now and then? Any thoughts? Marika?
It is, Marika. If there's no outright objection to that approach, I'm happy to have a look and see where, you know, something similar could fit and maybe suggest that in the next iteration so people can have a look at it and indeed, as you said, come back to that during the next meeting.
That's fine with me. So let's do that, and we'll pick up here next time. That doesn't mean that people can't communicate something they found earlier in the report, but let's try and do that before the meeting next week so that hopefully we can get close to finishing the final report next week, because I think the sooner we get it out for the constituencies and stakeholder groups to review, I know the council deadline is a little bit later, but the council deadline, if we can beat that as much as possible, it will help give more time for constituencies and stakeholder groups to take a look at it.
Yep.
Anything else for this meeting?
Yeah, this is Rick. I'm just wondering as well, you know, on that note, whether it would be worth getting a note out to the group, because I know several working group members weren't able to join the call today, but where we make clear that, you know, if there are any other further more substantial issues that people think the group should discuss or deliberate on, that those should be received ahead of the next meeting. So we can still, of course, discuss those, but at the least we should have a kind of, you know, some deadline by which people should have looked at it and flagged any issues they think need further consideration. I don't know if that's reasonable, if people think more time is needed, or whether that's something, you know, we can maybe consider during the next meeting. I just wanted to throw that out.
Would you be willing to send that message out?
Yes, no problem.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I'm sure you would, but just wanted to make sure we're clear on that. So anything else before we adjourn? Okay, we made pretty good progress, and I think we're getting close. Thanks, everyone, and have a good rest of the week, and we will, again, same time next week, and hopefully get even closer to wrapping this up.
Thanks, Chuck.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much, Lawrence. You may now stop the recordings.